Welcome. This is the first of a series of lectures concerned with healthcare processes and decision-making. In this series, we will consider what we might call the classic paradigm of the clinical process as it unfolds between patient and clinician. This series of lectures is concerned only with this classic paradigm. Other series of lectures will deal with the many variations on this theme that take place in the wide variety of settings and contexts in which healthcare takes place. In this series of lectures, we will be discussing what we refer to as the classic paradigm. By this, we mean the context of patient-clinician interaction, which is the usual subject of study when examining aspects of the clinical process, such as diagnostic reasoning or management and treatment. In this paradigm, the assumption is that a single patient is interacting with a single clinician about a single problem during a single episode of care. Various tools may be used to mediate the interaction, including medical records, computers, guidelines, and so forth. But for purposes of analysis, the discussion is confined to this arrangement, in part because it is realistic in many situations, and in part because it helps us bound the problem. In this discussion, we have been using the word clinician quite frequently to refer to the individual who is providing care. It will be helpful to define this term with a little more precision so we know just who it is we are talking about. In this discussion, clinician does not refer to a person in possession of any particular degree or educational background. After all, a person with a degree in nursing may be in a senior administrative position such as the CEO. Most people would not call that work clinical. Similarly, a person with a doctorate in medicine may be developing computer systems or running a health insurance plan. Most people would not call these forms of work clinical either. At the same time, we know that the work of patient care is performed by persons with a variety of educational and training backgrounds. So what do we mean by the word clinician? For the purposes of this series of lectures, we mean that the clinician is a person who possesses the following attributes. First, a clinician is someone who possesses specialized knowledge. Usually, this knowledge is obtained through extensive education, such as medical or nursing school. Second, a clinician is someone who has received extensive experiential training. For example, such fields as nursing and medicine require, after classroom learning, substantial training and practice under supervision in order to learn how to apply this formal knowledge in practice. Third, a clinician is a person who has a direct relationship with the patient. According to this view, regardless of one's training, indirect activities such as setting policy about patient care do not constitute clinical work, while direct interaction with patients does. Fourth, a clinician is someone who makes decisions about patient care, whether these are decisions about the assessment of the patient or decisions about how to manage the patient. We generally consider clinicians to be people who combine their knowledge, training, and experience to make choices about what to do for the patient. Fifth, a clinician is a person who is expected to act in the best interest of the patient. This is referred to as a fiduciary responsibility, similar to that of a trustee for a trust or a board member for an organization. The expectation is that these individuals make choices and actions that are not in their own best interest, but for those of the trustee, or in the case of clinicians, for the patient. Sixth, the clinician integrates diverse types of information, including not only individual knowledge of the patient and medical knowledge acquired in training, but also other information about local resources and constraints, as we will discuss later. Seventh, clinicians are almost always functioning within significant time and resource constraints. One may debate with one or more of these attributes whether they apply, but as a rule, they perform reasonably well at characterizing what we mean by clinician. Reference to clinicians for the purposes of this lecture series means a person possessing these attributes, whether it is a neurosurgeon, a clinical pharmacist, or a physical therapist. It is helpful before we begin talking about the clinical process to think about the kinds of information that clinicians make use of in the course of assessing and managing patients. This table lists five types of information which clinicians commonly make use of in their patient interactions and management. First, in the top row is patient data, which refers to information that is specific to an individual person, such as whether they have allergies, whether they have a history of diabetes, or a heart murmur is present. This information may obtain from the patient, from family or friends, from medical records, or from the clinician's own observations. In the second row, we see a second type of information, which is referred to as population statistics, meaning data that has been aggregated from individual patients. An informal version of population statistics is a clinician's knowledge of recent or local history, such as that there's been a flu going around, or a recent resurgence of whooping cough, which may have bearing on the findings in a particular case before him or her. Period. A more formal version of population statistics might include such things as a public health department publication about the frequency of diseases in a particular locale, or population-based reports that are obtained from a clinic or hospital electronic health record. A third type of information used by clinicians is medical knowledge. That is, the rules or conclusions about health and healthcare that are generalizable to many persons. This is the information we obtain from textbooks, whether electronic or in print form, from reviews and journal articles, and from the medical literature. A fourth type of information, in the fourth row, which is surprisingly useful for clinicians, might be called logistic information. This has to do not with what to do, but how to get things done. Not whether a particular medication is indicated for a particular patient, but how to obtain that medication, or how to get it paid for. Not whether a particular type of surgery is indicated for the patient, but what surgeon is available to perform it, and how may she or he be reached. This type of information is most often available in local sources, be they informal sources, such as the organizational knowledge of staff in the clinic or hospital who've been there for a long time, or formal sources, such as policy and procedure manuals or other institutional resources. Finally, a fifth type of information that physicians often use may be called social influence. This refers to how others get the job done. Clinicians may not always conform exactly to the practices of others, but in general, they like to know how other clinicians are managing particular problems and know that their own practices are relatively well aligned with those of others. In studying clinicians and their reasoning and decision-making processes, it is helpful to remember that all these kinds of information may be brought to bear and incorporated at various stages of the process. Now that we have looked at the major types of information that clinicians use, it is helpful to think about the ways in which clinicians organize and reorganize information as they manage a patient. In this series of lectures, we will see how information begins in a narrative structure, becomes rearranged to a very highly structured history and physical format, then gets rearranged again into meaningful groupings in a hierarchy described by Evans and Gadd. We will see how the structure of clinical information is the inverse of the way this information is structured in textbooks, how the manner of recording the information, such as the SOAP note, can be helpful in supporting clinicians' thinking, and how other ad hoc structures are used as needed. And finally, how this information may need to be reformulated into a computable structure so that healthcare information systems can make the information available for decision support, quality improvement, research, and the like. Although a great deal of effort and attention is devoted to giving structure to clinical data, as we will discuss later in this lecture series, the narrative structure is pervasive throughout the clinical process. This slide contains an old saying in healthcare, which has been attributed to Philip A. Tumulty, that says, "Disease hides its secrets in a casual parenthesis." What this means is that for all the useful information that we obtain by asking pointed and directed questions meant to elucidate the essential details of a patient's problem, it is often the case that critical clues emerge only when we simply allow the patient to tell his or her story. In fact, the clinical process almost always begins, and very often ends, with a narrative. Catherine Montgomery Hunter has examined and elucidated some of the many ways that stories are used and are important to the healthcare system. First, stories form the principal communication between patient and clinician. Before asking directed and pointed questions, clinicians are taught to ask open-ended questions that let the patient tell her story or his story in its native form. This enables the clinician not only to find facts embedded in the story that are meaningful for diagnosis, but also to understand the meaning of the illness for the patient. Hearing the story is an important part of relationship building and may have therapeutic value on its own. This can be a very important aspect of the quality of care as perceived by the patient. Beyond this, stories are also a form used for efficient communication among clinicians. Highly structured narratives are a form of very efficient communication among experts who often refer to these narratives as the patient's story. Storytelling in healthcare settings has also been shown to be an important part of the hidden curriculum through which values and ethics are communicated, often in informal communications during off-hours or after-hours. Unfortunately, our modern, often fragmented healthcare system does not always deal well with stories due to the constraints of time, the multidisciplinary process fragmentation, and other factors. As a result, we may eliminate or alter stories, reduce opportunities for them to be heard, or extract information from them and in the process lose important context or details. As we examine the clinical process through which clinicians gather information and make sense of the data and decide what to do for each patient, we need to recognize that the interpretation of data depends on many factors. First, there are professional and disciplinary differences. A neurologist and psychiatrist examining the same patient may elicit and focus on very different information and make very different sense of it. Clinicians also use differing diagnostic approaches to interpreting clinical data as they attempt to reach a diagnosis. More will be said about this later in the series. Observing clinicians working together in groups, it becomes apparent that an important part of interpretation, especially in interdisciplinary care, is social construction, which is to say that meaning arises from the discourse among clinicians as they discuss a patient. This can be observed in such settings as intensive care unit rounds, during which the discourse among the participants allows insight and consensus to emerge. Perhaps most important, clinician interpretation of data depends on context. The patient's context, the clinician context, the setting, and other contextual factors. A single piece of information may have very different implications depending on these contextual factors. As we said at the onset of this lecture, we are focusing on what we are calling the classic paradigm to help us understand the process that clinicians use. This slide depicts the classic paradigm with one patient, one problem, one clinician, and one visit, and compares it to an alternate situation, in this case the operating room. Surgical procedures usually involve one visit, concerned with one problem in a single patient, but many clinicians from many disciplines participate in the process, and synchronous information sharing and collaboration become especially important. The setting is also characterized by a short time horizon and fairly narrow clinical focus. as well as usually substantial advanced planning and rich resource availability. These differences may have implications for the kind of health information technologies that will be helpful to the clinicians involved. Let's consider another setting that differs from that classic paradigm. In this case, the presence of complex acute illness. In such cases, one patient may be cared for in one or more visits by multiple clinicians, dealing with multiple health problems. The patient may have lung disease, kidney disease, joint disease, and infection, as well as chronic conditions such as diabetes and hypertension. In these instances, there are multiple disciplines serving multiple roles, performing multiple tasks. There is often a short time horizon, and there are often unplanned events, as well as almost always a great deal of uncertainty about some of the data, especially in critical care settings that tend to be a focus on immediate goals. And because of unanticipated events and uncertain data, there is a requirement for flexibility and dynamic replanning as things change. Healthcare information systems designed for such contexts might have different requirements than those designed for simple one-to-one settings. Yet another example in which healthcare goes beyond the classic paradigm described at the outset of this lecture is the emergency department, where there are many patients who have many different clinical problems being treated simultaneously by many different clinicians, usually involving a single visit, although in many cases there may have been previous episodes of care. There is simultaneous attention to both very acute and very non-acute conditions. The very short time horizon in emergency departments is captured in their expression, treat 'em and street 'em, because of the need to constantly keep things moving. There is a very strong requirement to be prepared for the unexpected, even in the face of significant resource constraints. And there is a significant requirement for effective coordination, cooperation, and collaboration among the many individuals participating in the care. Once again, these factors may have significant influence on the kinds of information technology that will be helpful. Having considered several alternatives to the classic paradigm, we now return to it. One way of looking at this is that people who consult with a clinician, in general, are looking for the answers to three questions. What is the matter? What can be done about it? And what will happen to me? These questions that patients ask correspond to the classic steps that clinicians take to make a diagnosis, recommend treatment, and make a prognosis. In the remainder of these lectures, we will go through this process, discussing in turn how clinicians gather data from the patient, analyze findings within that data, make sense out of it to reach a diagnosis, consider that diagnosis along with many other contextual factors to recommend a treatment or management plan, and finally, communicate their results to a variety of interested parties.